The battlefield was surprisingly close to the river, an easy walk that took only a short time. Even Ryan, with his healing wound, enjoyed the morning stroll. They passed through rolling fields of wheat and barley, along narrow, high-walled lanes and lines of trim picket fences that divided meadows where horse-drawn plows went about their placid business.
By the three Kennedys, but this is truly a pastoral idyll. It quite takes me back to my days of yore when I would lend a hand with the harvest.
It's good land.
Everyone paused on the crest of land, looking toward the northwest. The light mist had burned off, and it promised to be a fine day.
This the scene of the battle?
Road passing left to right is the old river road, also called the Hamburg Road. Look way over yonder and see the little spire? That's a church stands on the same spot as the meeting house of Shiloh.
The heart of the fight was ahead, wasn't it? I recall places called the Peach Orchard and the Hornet's Nest.
Want me to tell it or not? I'd just as like to go sit on the porch and sip whiskey.
You go right ahead. Tell us like it was.
April 6 and 7 of 1862 saw the first major battle of the Western Campaign of the series of fights called either the Civil War or the War Between the States, depending on where you come from. During the Battle of Shiloh, the Northerners lost over 13,000 men, while we only lost a tad over 10,000 good old boys.
So the Confederacy won?
Well, the South failed to push home and beat the Yankees, and that opened up the trouble at Vicksburg. Guess the fact is that Shiloh was like a poisoned arrow straight in the heart of the Stars and Bars. But Grant took the losses hard, and it kind of slowed down the war for a while.
Ryan shifted position, trying to take a little weight off the injured thigh. The good news was that it definitely felt a lot better than it had the previous day. He looked across the green, undulating fields, trying to imagine them scattered with lines of weary men in blue and gray.
I got here a plan.
Portillo reached into his pocket, pulled out a tattered piece of paper, unfolded it, and spread it on the ground. There were rectangles and arrows in different colors, mainly either blue or red. The outlanders gathered around.
Yankees is blue, South's red.
Not gray?
Gray faded and got kind of dirty, so I had to go to red. Look here. Reading from the north, the Army of Tennessee, as they call themselves, I say is the Bluebellies, was commanded by Sherman here, with McClernand, Prentiss, Wallace, and Stuart. On the other side, we got Hardee in the middle with No. 3 Corps of the Confederate Army of the Mississippi. Bragg, with two corps, is here, just behind him. Major General Polk, with one corps, is in the third rank. And Brigadier General Breckinridge, at the rear, with the gallant lads of the reserve.
Ryan looked at the fields with their gentle curves. The coppices of young trees, leaves bright green, turning and shifting in the light breeze. And he tried to imagine the battle unfolding in front of him. The damp, muddy ground, churned by hooves and boots and the wheels of the heavy artillery. The swirling masses of men, their uniforms streaked with dirt. Wreathed in huge, blinding clouds of black powder smoke. Many of the men terrified and utterly, hopelessly confused, praying for the noise and the slaughter to stop so they could go home to their farms and families. Ryan knew enough of military history to be aware that muskets collected after the fighting would often carry multiple charges. A soldier, his mind blanked with panic, would ram home mini-ball after mini-ball until his gun was totally blocked with up to a dozen unfired rounds. Or they might use their ramrod to force down powder, shot, and wadding, then let panic win the day, squeeze the trigger, and shoot off their ramrod as well, leaving themselves with a totally useless weapon.
To put it simply, the Battle of Shiloh was a battle of six big mistakes. Huge triple stoop ones. Some on one side and some on the other.
Portillo led them away, his folded map tucked under his arm, taking them across the scene of the great fight. The sun was rising steadily in a cloudless sky, and the temperature was rising with it. Ryan's guess put it somewhere in the mid-80s. Portillo stopped at the setting of the old peach orchard.
Basically, you got Grant and the Army of the Tennessee settled around the church.
How many men would Grant have had under his command?
40,000 bluebellies, thicker than ticks on a hog's belly.
And the Rebs?
Rebs? The Gallant boys in gray had around the same number.
What were these mistakes? I recall someone mentioning plucking defeat from the jaws of victory.
I don't know nothing about that. First mistake was Johnston's. Knew that Buell was moving north with reinforcements and decided to get in his blow first. But the roads was bad, and his maps poor, and his whole army a shambles of confusion. Took a day to sort it out, so he delayed the fight until dawn on Sunday, April 6. Should have been 3 in the morning the day before. Second and third mistakes came both from the north. Grant was drunk in Savannah and never expected an attack. Mistake 2. Following on this was the fact that the Bluebellies never bothered to put out proper patrols around Shiloh. Fact is that most of the men were still asleep when we hit them. Number 3.
Wasn't Lew Wallace at Shiloh, the man who wrote Ben-Hur?
Sure was. Gotten himself chilled and leading a breakout a mite later. And he came up with mistake 4. Soon as Grant heard firing, he sailed up to the landing here. Brigadier General Wallace had the 2nd Division of the Army of Tennessee, and he was moving with a long column of men down that narrow road yonder, away from where the battle had started. Instead of turning the whole column ass about so the rear became the front, he ordered the men out front to turn and march back through the column. Kind of reversed it, making it march through itself. Total shambles.
They moved across the battlefield again, towards a place called the Hornet's Nest.
This land was once so sodden with blood that you could walk from one side to the other stepping only on the corpses from both armies.
With the exception of the blood and corpses, this more or less like it was?
Yeah. It was kept as a kind of monument. National Military Park. Right up to Skydark. Visitor Center got blasted by a stray nuke. I'll proceed now. 5th mistake. Supreme commander of the Confederate boys was General Albert Sidney Johnston. In the big charge, he had a couple of small wounds and had the heel ripped from his booty by a ball. Bit later, he got hit on the bend of the knee by a stray round. That was about half after 1. Johnston didn't know it was serious and ignored it. That was number 5. Hour or so later, he nearly fell from the saddle. An aide, Governor Isham Harris of Tennessee, asked if he was wounded. Johnston replied, "Yes. And I fear, seriously. Bullet severed an artery and his boot filled with his lifeblood. Had a tourniquet in his field pack that would easy have saved him. Died around half after 2.
If my memory is not too ailing, I believe that General Johnston was the most senior officer to die in battle during the entire war.
Wouldn't know about that. All I know is what happened here.
With the saga of Shiloh winding toward its end, Ryan saw in his imagination the scattered bodies of 3,500 inexperienced young soldiers and thought about the horrors of the field hospitals of the day, with their blunted saws and no anesthetic. 16,000 had been wounded, 3,000 taken prisoner or simply missing in action.
Buell's on his way north with reinforcements, but Grant's men are being pushed back toward the Tennessee. Dusk was falling. Beauregard took over on Johnston's shocking death, and here came the 6th and biggest mistake.
Defeat from the jaws of victory.
Right. He held off, and the gutless Bluebellies escaped, and everyone went home.
They stood in silence in the heat of the late morning, everyone locked into his or her own thoughts. Far above their heads, a white-ruffed kestrel was riding a thermal, its eyes scanning the verdant fields below it.
That wasn't bad. Not bad at all, Judas.
Well, thank you, sir.
J.B. fished in one of his bottomless pockets. Counting the change with his eyes, he handed most of it over to the guide. Portillo fingered it suspiciously, then nodded and smiled.
It'll do.
Both Ma Jode and Judas Portillo, accompanied by 8 snot-nosed ragged urchins and 3 mongrel dogs, came to see them leave the landing. The raft drifted slowly off into the current, steered by Christie, with Doc and JB working the sweeps, letting the Tennessee take them away south.
We going far? I was sort of surprised you told them we planned to stick with the river. The way that old woman kept eyeing our blasters, I wouldn't be surprised if we didn't have some company downstream.
Ryan was sitting on the roof of the makeshift shelter, enjoying the early afternoon weather.
What I tell them and what we're doing is 2 different things, Mother. You're right. I saw some skulking and whispering going on. half a dozen men with muskets left just after we went to visit the battle site.
So we're leaving the water?
Sure are. Get us around the corner, then we'll break away from it and strike off west.
I'm sure there used to be a big dam to the south.
River's changed its course. Ma Joe told me that. Said the actual battle was nearer the Tennessee than it used to be.
Old damned country's changed its shape. Sea to shining sea. California slid into the Pacific, most of it. And New York had been transmogrified into the ruined haunt of ghouls and ghosts.
They floated south, the settlement vanishing behind them into the shimmering heat haze. The sides of the river were lined with luxuriant bushes and a row of aspens that trembled in the faint northerly that rode at their shoulders. JB pushed back his fedora, then took off his glasses, polishing them on his sleeve.
Man could get used to this.
You're quiet, Jack.
Jack was lying on the front of the boat, his chin in his hands, watching the water as it bubbled under the rough bow.
Nothing to say. Battlefield depressed me. Didn't feel like talking. Now out in the open again, I feel better. You got nothing to say.
Is that bruise better?
Some.
They were now about a mile from the Ville, and staying on the river any longer meant danger. Ryan pointed to the western bank at a narrow inlet.
JB, think you can get us in there?
No problem.
It was lined with wild rose bushes, unusually scented, that filled the air with their fragrance. Ryan waited, the Sig Sauer cocked in his right hand, while Jack leapt ashore with the line, tethering the raft to a sturdy dogwood. As they were getting off, Christy pointed behind them, across the river and a little way downstream.
Looks like we just missed the reception committee.
A group of raggedy men had emerged from behind a raised shoal at the top of the far bank. All of them were holding long muskets and waving their arms.
Bastards.
I'm not surprised. Best surprise is no surprise, as Trader used to say.
Way out of range. Still, just a slight chance getting hit from a spent ball. Best get out of sight of the sons of bitches.
That puts me in mind of the famous last words of... I just remember, but I believe he was a ranking officer in the Civil War.
Make it fast, Doc.
His last recorded words were, "Stand fast, my gallant lads. They could not hit an elephant at this range." And then he said, "Ah!"
Mildred wasn't laughing. She glowered across the steady current of the river at the small group of men still firing at them. Finally, she threw her check target revolver.
No way, Millie. Not even you.
Want to bet, love?
No. Man bets against you over a shooting stands to lose his jack.
That's a good range. Even for you, and even for that blaster.
Go for it. Teach that murdering scum a sharp lesson.
Mildred immediately took up the classic shooter's standing pose, feet slightly apart, right arm holding the gun outstretched, left arm at her side. She looked along the sighted barrel with both eyes wide open.
Tricks to squeeze the trigger real gentle between beats of your heart.
It was a good range for a hunting rifle, but for a handgun, it would be a phenomenal shot. The men opposite saw what she was doing and started an exaggerated dance, taunting Mildred.
Fire blast.
One of the capering rednecks threw up his arms and fell motionless to the dirt, leaving him a bundle of sprawled flesh and rags along the silent flowing river. His comrades stooped over the corpse.
Best move. Get them fired up and they might find a way across and come after us. Leave while we're ahead of the game.
Phew. Amazing shot. Good as any I ever seen you do.
It didn't allow enough for windage and thermal off the water. Aimed at his chest and took him through the mouth.
Ryan grinned as he limped toward the west, ignoring the impotent muskets from the far side of the Tennessee.